From 78 on, I never repeated a shear, and Sunday, Monday, whatever I do. So what you're coming in on Monday now, this is about the 10th year, the history of Torah in the United States. And you're coming into, I think it's a second shear or third or two and a half shear already, dealing with three people that deserve credit who tried to change the world. You're coming in Shlomo LeKalbach. We won't finish today. We'll pick up again in Chodesh Elul, and then it's Meir Kahanim, and then it's the Rebbetzin. No one gives her credit for what Rebbetzin Esther Jungreis did. So let me begin. Today, let's catch
this
the date.
This meeting is being recorded.
Today is Monday, June 14th, 2021, and it should just be a day of Besorah Tovat. I had a good laugh. It was just Pashat Korach. And whenever I think of Pashat Korach, I think of my first time back in the States, 77, when the government sent me to speak at the RCA convention. And my parents are going to come in Aliyah later that year. And I'm spending Shabbat in Pelham Parkway. And my father davened Shabbat in the Young Israel. And Rabbi Rubin gets up to speak. And he says, B'nei Korach lo metu, the kinder from Korach of Nishkishtodim. Avu Zainzei, where are they? They're sitting in front of me and cursing me. And boy, I couldn't believe my ears, but that was the American rap in it. So Rabbi Grinstein, my dear student, son of a student, sent me that he remembers he had a Rebbe who he loved, taught him Hebrew, but whenever the kids acted up, this is what the Rebbe would say. Whenever he got sore, die Kinder vom Korach sind nicht gestorben. Nu wo seien die Kinder vom Korach? Where are they? Sie seien da von meiner zwei Augen. They're in front of my two eyes. So I see Rabbi Rubin was not the first one to think of it. I also want to mention Rabbi Francis from Atlanta. Tells me that the parking lot at Congregation Beit Jacob is no longer open on Shabbat. There are two reasons why. One is that the elderly congregants who used it have not returned because of the pandemic, COVID. The other reason is that all the gates are closed because of security reasons. So mitoch shelo lishma, I say balishma. I just want to mention some minor corrections, not really Baruch Rizel, I thank you. I mentioned that Rabbi Gifter came from Connecticut. Yes, I meant he came from the Rabbinate in Waterbury. He was born in Portsmouth, Virginia, and grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. I also mentioned Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and Rav Uderman were first cousins, so here's a correction, they were second cousins. I trust that's correct. That they were second cousins, not first cousins, but halacha l'maisa, it really doesn't matter. Okay, let's roll and get back to Rav Shlomo LeKalbach. Last week was a very difficult sheyua because I dealt with a very delicate topic. It's a topic that you cannot overlook because too many people know about it. It's not something that I would go with the shita. What you say, it has to be truthful, but you don't have to tell everything. Here, you must deal with it because it's all over the social media, etc. And we dealt, first of all, with a brief outline of Shlomo's life, and then we got involved with the accusations against him, and how can it be that today he's conquered the world, the Hasidic world, the Litvish world, the Black Hat world, the Kippas Ruga world. We're all singing Kalbach's tunes. I will deal with it halachically in the Sunday class down the line. Rav Menashe Klein has a chair of Moshe, but I don't want to deal with it halachically. I want to deal with it from the basic question of can you sing his songs? So I made the point, and I have to say people complimented me on this and agreed with me, that when all was said and done, he was never accused of rape or seduction. He was accused of inappropriate behavior. I told you with my own experience with a relative, 40, 50 years later, she told me how Schlemmler would call her in the middle of the night, 1,000 miles away, and ask her what she's wearing. I mean, this is abnormal. It's not proper behavior. And then you have to deal with the question of Rav Schlemmler hugging and every dear brother, dear sister, and putting his arm around you. all right, this is what we spoke about yesterday in a halachic context, the machlokes ha-poskim, the Rambam, can you touch a strange woman? And according to Maimonides, it's an issa d'oraita. According to Nachmanides, it's an issa d'rabbanan. But even Maimonides says if it's beli ta'ava, if it's without sexual feeling, there is no issa, there certainly is not an issa d'oraita, and it could be there's not an issa d'rabbanan. Well, how do you measure without sexual feeling? Ein adam af bitrapas ala rayot. We're all human beings, none of us are angels. And I need not tell you where we're at when you want to give a list of rabbanim who are sitting in jail at this very moment in the state of Israel for improper sexual behavior. I told you, as a side issue, this question comes up with a therapist, with a psychologist. It's a serious question. And the Rav refused to give an answer. I spoke about it yesterday. I don't want to repeat myself. But when all is said and done, somehow Klal Yisrael, and these were the Gemaras I cited last week, and Lo Nevi'ihem B'nei Nevi'im Chem, the Gemara in Psachim, Da Samachvav, the Gemara in Brachat, Daf Mandalet, Amid Bet, Mechei Amid Aleph, Fukhazim Ma'amadava, somehow the Jewish people, the Torah people, have bowed their heads, and it's if we say, look, we know, Shlomo, you were not perfect, but the good outweighs the bad, and everyone has accepted him. Now, my dear student, Rabbi Norman Schloss, I don't know if you know Norman Schloss, but if you drink Coca-Cola on Pesach, you got to write him a thank you note. He's the Mashkiach, he goes to Ireland a few months a year for the OU. So Normie sent me an email telling me a story. This story I've heard 100 times over, different variations, but the story is essentially what Normie is writing. A number of years ago, I'm quoting him now, I was in Prague with Rabbi David Orlovsky. At the Suda Shlishit, someone started a Kalbach Niggin. Rabbi Orlovsky banged on the table and said, quote, I never sing Kalbach, because I don't agree with the way he conducted himself. Then I heard the following from an impeccable source. Shlomo was in a pizza shop, and this is the story going around that he was in a pizza shop in Brooklyn, hugging and kissing as was his usual custom. He went over to one person and said, can I give you a hug, my friend? The man said, I can't be your friend because I don't approve of the way you act. Whereupon Shlomo said, if I do tshuva gemura, will you be my friend? Yes, said the man. Kalbach sat down at a table, put his head in his hands, and sat like that for 15 minutes. He then said, I just did tshuva gemura, will you now be my friend? Yes, said the person. And they hugged. The next night, Shlomo died on the plane to Israel. Rabbi Orlovsky then broke in to a Kalbach Niggin. All right, I don't know if he died on a flight on the plane to Israel. I think he was on a flight to Canada. But this story must be essentially true because I've heard it and it's been written up and it makes sense. All right, Charlie, you're a good Yeki, and I'm, I hope, a good Litvak. Is this the way you do tshuva? Is this as someone puts his head down on a table in a pizza shop? All right, it's a cute story. There is no doubt that Shlomo Kalbach, see, and this is the point I made last week, which I think is very important. The Rebbe, whose Yahrzeit was yesterday, the Rebbe sent him and his partner, Zalman Schechter Shlomi, sent them to college campuses. These were two Chabad Hasidim at the time. And you all know what happened to Zalman Schechter Shlomi. Became what we spoke about yesterday, an idol unto himself. That's paganism, when you set all the standards. He totally left the Torah world. All right, they have philosopher and Judaism and singing and special type minyanim, what he went into. Hard to believe that he once was a Lubavitcher. But Rav Shlomo said, say what you want, remained within the fold. And Klal Yisrael has accepted him. So I think what we said, it's worth hearing it, the shir is on yutorah.org, last week's shir. I think I'm correct in my assessment, and so many decades later now, we all sing Shlomo Lelis Nigunim, we remember the good, and halavai we can say he did tshuva on what was not proper. But there's no question in my mind, and I stress it again and again, the basis of our existence as Torah Jews is the concept that God commands. God commands, God demands. We cannot play around with the halachic system. It's not a human system, it's a divine system. And history has shown us, the minute you start playing around with it, you know how the Reform Movement began, and there's some truth to it. The Rebbe always used to say this and laugh, but it's true. They didn't like the fact we say you can cook in twice, all right? You say you cook in pice on Shabbos, it's not the end of the world if you say it once. Take a look what became of the Reform Movement. Look what became of the Conservative Movement, how they began. They took the Mechitza down. All right, men and women sitting together, you'll look through Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, you will not find one halacha telling you you have to build a Mechitza in the shul. But the truth is, Shlomo, right? I have it. Shlomo, and Cheryl. That I can't forget. The truth is, Shlomo, that there was no need for the Shulchan Aruch to say it. Every Jew knew you daven, men and women separate, us, Yeshe, Moshe, etc. The Gemara in Sukkah, the Beit HaMikdash. So look how it began. They took the Mechitza down, and I need not tell you where they're at today. And we see it in our world too. We live in two worlds. The paganistic world at times overwhelms us. Open up the Jerusalem Post, open up the New York Times, and open up Torah Hashem Tamima. They're one world, we're another world. And we struggle with this because we can't avoid the influence of the big world around us. Now, I want to go further with Reb Shlomo, and I want to give credit to Dr. Natan Ophir Affenbacher. His work on Reb Shlomo Kabach is, first of all, let me just give you a drop of background. The Affenbacher family, I'm sure, Charlie, you know the family. It was a very prominent German family. The grandfather was a dentist on the Upper West Side, I believe. And these were real Torah im Derech Eretz Jews. The father, Dr. Nathan, Dr. Elmer Affenbacher, who I knew very, very well. It's just maybe his first job site was just recently. He was a member of my shul in my first position, 61, 62. And he was one of the founders of Tides. You know what Tides was? Tides, the cleaner. You use Tides to clean your clothes? Tides. Torah im Derech Eretz Society. That was Tides. And he was one of the founders. This was Elmer Affenbacher. He would sit, I can tell you this with my own eyes, he would sit Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur with a little table in front of him with three marxes going at once. Tell me, you daven on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, how many marxerim do you use? One. Three. One was the Shul's Machzer, a Birnbaum, which I would be announcing pages. The other one was a Rettelheim Machzer, which Dr. Hexter can tell you about from Germany. And the third one was the Machzer his grandfather used. He had three Machzerim going at once. And all right, the children got caught up with a guy named Rakefet and BMT and Machon Gold and all that went with the post-6-day war. The children all came in Aliyah, and then it brought the parents. And the one son I didn't teach was Natan. He was the eldest. But Natan married a student of mine, an Israeli girl from Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim. And we were very close. And he did a doctorate at Hebrew U, so he's well aware of how you do research and how you write a biography. His work on Reb Shlomo Kabach is excellent. Everything I'll quote, you can get the biography. It was published first in English by Urim here and then translated into Hebrew. And everything is footnoted. For every word he says, there are sources. Now, what's fascinating about Shlomo's biography, and I frankly would love to see a documentary done because I don't know if there was anyone else that had so many different influences upon him as a youngster. Now, I'm well aware that a guy named Rakefet lectured in the Kollel in the Monday class 22 years on the Rav, published 2 volumes on the Rav, and he also shows that the Rav had many influences upon him. He grew up under the influence of Brisk, afterwards Chabad Chaslovich. Later he goes to Berlin, Torim Derech Eretz. But there's one big difference. The Rav had all these influences, but he was older. As a youngster, it was Kulo Lita. When he was already of high school age, a little older, there was a certain Hasidic influence. And then when he was studying for his doctorate, he already was in his late 20s, pushing the mid-20s, late 20s. He got his doctorate in 31. So the Rav was born in 03. So he was already 28, all right, and he's 25, 26, 27. He was exposed to Berlin Jewry. But with Shlomo Lakanbach, what's fascinating is that at a very early age already, he is exposed to different Torah lifestyles. And it's food for thought. It could be that with a young child, this is an endless debate. I'm not telling you I know the definitive answer. It could be there's no definitive answer. But it could be you can take a point of view that a child you have to educate a certain way. Well, he's a little older, post bar mitzvah, his mind is broadening, then you can speak with him about different points of view and expose him. But a kid to be exposed, fascinating. And when all is said and done, you see that Schleimler comes out of it multifaceted or multi-confused. You can take your choice to describe him. Now, his father, Rabbi Naftali Kalbach, was from a very famous Kalbach rabbinic family. The most famous member of the family was Rabbi Dr. Joseph Kalbach, who perished in the Holocaust. He was the last Rav of Hamburg, was a legendary figure, Talmud Chacham, Yirei Shemayim, speaker, inspiration even within the death camps. All the Kalbachs all over the world are interrelated. Endless Rabbanim in Germany, rabbi after rabbi after rabbi. After the Holocaust, of course, you find in Ireland the chief rabbi, the rabbi of Belfast, was also a Kalbach, and you'll see them in Berlin, the Mashgiach, and today he's still in his 90s, should live and be well, also a Kalbach, and this was the family. Now, Naftali in 1917 married the daughter of Rabbi Asher Kahn. Now, you can pronounce it Kahn or you can pronounce it Kohn. Arthur or Asher Kohn, again, you're talking about a legendary figure. Who am I talking about? You're talking about the Rav of Basel, Switzerland, who was a big Zionist. He attended the first Zionist Congress, was friendly with Theodor Herzl. When Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook got lost in Europe, you all know the story, I've told it many times, but to repeat it very quickly, in 1912, 1913, they started talking about organizing a world organization, a world conference of Orthodox Jews, Shomer Shabbos Jews. With the turn of the 20th century, Torah is under attack. If anyone tells you that everyone in Europe was a tzaddik and a Yirei Shemayim, they're giving you a phony description not only of Germany, but of Vilna and Kovner as well. Unfortunately, Torah fought bitter battles with modernism, Haskalah, and b'chol davadah, there were Jews who thought they were smarter than Shas and smarter than Poskim and ultimately smarter than God. And what we have out of it is the mass assimilation and intermarriage and the loss of millions of Jews who disappear into the greater world. So Rav Cook was interested in attending this organization. At that time, it was not anti-Zionist. Anyone who was a Shomer Shabbos could be a member. And he traveled to Europe for the first conference, and he the war broke out. 1914, the war broke out. There was no way to get back to Palestine. And Rav Kook went to Switzerland. For 2 years, he lived in the house of the Basel Rav, Rav Asher Kohn, for 2 full years. Then the rabbinate opened Machzikei Hadat in London. Rav Kook goes to London, and from London in 1919, he's called back to become the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, and a few years later, the chief rabbinate is organized, etc. So you see, he already, look at the influences on him, that one grandfather, another grandfather, German Jews, but more open-minded, Zionist, Theodor Herzl, the organization that Rav Kook wanted to be part of as a founding member, later becomes Agudat Yisrael, and as I've told you so many times, and as they are ashamed to admit in public, anyone who believes that there can be Jewish sovereignty before the coming of Messiah is a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, debauched, repetitious, no good, apikairis, exclamation point. We'll leave it at that. Rav, so this is the little Kalbach. Now, his parents have 3 children. The eldest, born in 1919, is Shulamit. Interestingly, Affenbach in his research could not establish her proper German name. He found 3 different names. I hope I'm pronouncing them right. I wish we could have a class in front of me. Charlie would correct me. Linerl, Zerlina, and Serlin. 3 different names. But the name was Shulamit. She later marries the son of Rav Reuven Levavitz, the Mira Mashkiach, and they live a long, productive life in the holy city of Borough Park, Brooklyn. 3 sons who go on to become Rabbanim. A number of years later, his mother gives birth to twins, Eliachayim and Shlomo. Now, here they are, born in Germany, and you would imagine, well, they're born in Germany, they'll get a good education. However, when they were 6 years old, his father accepts the position of chief rabbi of Baden, Austria. Baden, Austria, those of you that know anything about European history, these were the hot springs. This is where Jews came from all over Europe. Like today, the Europeans come to Eilat, that there's something healing about Eilat and the Yam HaMelech. People swear to me, if I'd go to the Yam HaMelech, I'd get rid of meniscus, my kneecaps would work properly. And I know people who come to Israel just to go 2 weeks, Yam HaMelech. All right, Baden, half hour drive from Vienna. So, first of all, what does this mean? That you're now moving to an area that is much more multicultural than Germany per se. This is Vienna, the waltz, the dancing, the life, Mozart. But there's another side to the coin. All the Gedolei Yisrael would come to the Baden hot water springs. So here you could be a little kid growing up in a little hamlet. It wasn't a big city. It was a hamlet, a village. I don't know if it had the status of a city in Austria. And all the Gedolei Yisrael are visiting. A little Yiddish, Minhata Krank, you know, you're not well, you're arthritis, rheumatism. Inevitably, I have a theory that the Jews suffer more from all these illnesses because we don't know how to drink. The Goyim are always drinking, and I don't know, maybe the more you drink, your body, I don't know, if anyone's listening, a medical doctor, do research, see if there's anything to it. So this is where the kids are living. Right when they get there, one of the first guests that comes to the hot springs, and of course they're all in touch with the chief rabbi, there was a big shul, and a number of shtiblach, was the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, you're talking about perhaps at that moment in time, he may have been the most famous Rebbe in the world. Someone would disagree with me and say perhaps the Gerer Rebbe. You had then Rav Avraham Mordechai, the second Gerer Rebbe, the Sfat Emes' son. But I'll tell you, the Gerer Rebbe was more or less limited to Poland. The Lubavitcher Rebbe already was a world figure. He traveled, he influenced. He was dealing with a more cosmopolitan world figure. And he comes to the hot springs, and the father takes the twins for a bracha. He couldn't be sure of the date. He says it's either a year before I was born or the year I was born. You know how you know when I was born? DiMaggio's second year in the major leagues. What year is that? Oh my gosh, look how the generations have gone down. 37. He came up in 36. I mentioned DiMaggio and have to put up with the Yankees of today. Eichna Flugi Borim. Oh boy, garnished McGarnished. I could hit better and I'd stay more healthy. They pay these guys $1 million a day and they're sick every other day. Their muscles, schmuscles, I don't know. I never saw DiMaggio miss so many games. Unbelievable. All right, Ein Malasa. Anyway, he takes the twins to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and the Rebbe gives them a bracha. And for everything, there's a source. Whatever I'm telling you is not anecdotal. There's an actual source. I bless you that someday you should be Hasidic Yidden and don't be German little boys. Charlie, I apologize to you. Charlie, I apologize. Sleep with your talit cotton and serve Hashem with joy. I mean, this is a bracha from the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe. He's telling these kids, if I guess... You're German, forget your German heritage, and you should be good Hasidic Jews, and sleep with a talis katan. Now, I never saw a Litvisha Talmud Chacham sleep with a talis katan. What are you talking about, a talis katan at night? There's no chiyuv tzitzit at night. And there's no chiyuv tzitzit if you're wearing pajamas, right or wrong. So at night, all right, you go to sleep, you take off your pants, you take off your tzitzit, but a Hasidic Yid, shloft mit der talis katan, it's a different lifestyle. The morning comes, what, we go to mikveh? Bennett goes to mikveh? I have to say, I'm telling everyone to give it a chance. I had to respond to emails of my grandchildren. Everyone is so upset. All right, I did everything I could, but Bennett is now the prime minister. Give him a chance. He is the first prime minister in the history of Israel that puts on tefillin every day. Don't forget what I just said. All right? V'ro kameretz kishem Hashem nekra alecha v'yarumi mecha. Give him a chance. This is the way God worked it out. We did our hishtatlut, but now we have to have a little bitachon. All right. So this is the bracha he got. The second factor I alluded to, and where was he living? Living a half hour from Vienna. He's living in Baden. It's a resort town. So tell me, you go on a resort. You go to a hotel. You see the advertisements now. They're trying to start up, to restart the tourist industry for obvious reasons. So they give you a program, what's doing, and inevitably part of the program is at night. There's a limit to how many lectures you can listen to. So at night, a Hasidic singing, and they give you names and who's going to come and who's going to be there and cantors and chazanim. There's a whole in Yerushalayim now, a whole group of cantors, Yerushalayim, I think Ranana, they're doing Broadway songs. Chazanim, they're doing a whole overture to Broadway operas, Broadway songs, Broadway shows, all right? So here, this kid is growing up near Vienna in Baden, and right next to the house is a big park, and every evening they're playing waltzes and people are dancing, and falls in love with music. And you can see already at an early age how this kid is being tested. And Schlemmel is interviewed, and he says, I had two dreams in my heart. I wanted to be the biggest Lamdan in the world, and also the greatest musician. When I was 8 or 9, my mother bought me a violin. And I was ready to take lessons to learn how to play. And my Rebbe, who was teaching me, said to me, quote, right now, you're not ready. The Ribbono Shel Olam is testing you because you can't do both. Or you're learning or you're playing violin. So I gave up the violin. Now, this is interesting. Here is Shlomo Le Kalbach. He never learned music formally. They say he didn't know how to read notes. He never played the violin again. Later in life, he picked up piano. From the piano, he went to the guitar. But with all that he wrote and all that he accomplished, he was never what you would call a fine musician, a top-grade musician. So you see already as a kid what is happening to him. Now, let me go one step further. And here too, it brings back a lot of memories. You can have fathers, rabbanim, and the children don't want to daven in their father's shul. And we're not talking about a conservative temple, we're talking about an Orthodox shul. But it's too formal, it's too much English, they're announcing pages, and each aliyah they give a little synopsis of the Torah reading. So the kid will find the shtibble a few blocks away, and you can have that with the father, a prominent rabbi, and the children are elsewhere. But he describes what happened. The big shul where his father was rabbi was very cold, very yekish, very formal, very dignified. If you could go back in time and go into Kehillat KJ in the 1950s, the 40s, 60s, you'd know what I'm talking about. Go back to the Jewish center, the 1920s, the 1930s. Why? You couldn't get an aliyah without a high hat. They were hats. They used to have a procession in KJ with the Torah coming out. All right, some people love it, and some kids, it's not for them. Next to the big shul, right around the corner, was a shtibel, a Europeish shtibel, because you got to remember, coming to the hot water springs were endless Hasidic Yidden and endless Hasidic Rabbanim. And that shtibel was filled with Shatkava Hasidim and Bavava Hasidim, and occasionally the Shatkava Rebbe came, the Bavava Rebbe came, and the Kalmbach boys davened only there. They did not daven in their father's shtibel. Now, let me just say a word about Shatkav, because none of you heard that name today. There may be a little Rebbe in Bnei Brak that carries the title. Shatkav in Poland before World War II was one of the biggest Hasidiyot. It was second only to Ger. It was wiped out by Hitler. It's Friedman. It's the Rizhina dynasty. The Rizhina dynasty, I've lectured about this years ago. Rizhina dynasty was very fascinating. Anyone, do you ever hear the expression, Arujina and Einikel? If Cheryl would be Arujina and Einikel, you would have to buy her jewelry, not just for the three holidays, but every week, some good jewelry. What am I talking about? Rizhin, no, give me the word, Malchut. The Rizhina dynasty went with the concept Binyamin. I keep on saying the name we came up with, your same name. I kept on saying Yeshua. Binyamin. The Rizhina dynasty, beginning with Rabbi Yisrael, it was Malchut. Now, you'll ask yourself the question, Malchut, tell me, I admire Rakefit. He drives a broken-down car. He doesn't overdress. You don't see him sporting identity that he's a kveis, a millionaire, etc. I like a rabbi who's down to earth. Rishon worked with a different shita. The Kohen Gadol, Kohanim, the Beit HaMikdash, Ein Bo Dlam, the Gemara in Pesachim, the gold, the silver, people, and all, everyone, the Rishonim explain it. Why all this stress? Because look, we all have our problems. No one is sitting in this classroom who can say, I have no problems in the world. The Rebbe used to say, the whole Chet Beredabin is Min HaMakim Karaticha Hashem. There's no human being who can say life is perfect. A young person, an older person, believe me, there's no human being. I once gave a talk when they honored me a few years ago at YU. So one of the key, the chairman of the board of REITs had just had a fire that burned down his apartment. So I looked him in the eye in front of about 800 people. And I said, tell me, is your life perfect? He looked at me. He said, Rebbe, you know what we've gone through. No one's life is perfect. But when you come to the Beis HaMikdash, perfection, shleimut, the ultimate. Ein aniyut b'mokam ha'shirut, the Gemara says. Even when they gave the cows, the animals that are going to be sacrificed to drink, they used beautiful cups. Ein aniyut b'mokam ha'shirut. You come to the Rebbe, the Rishon Rebbe came out dressed in a bekesha with golden threads, surrounded by Hasidim who were dressed like the honor god. They drove him, he was in a carriage, six horses driving the carriage. People loved it. And this was Rishon. And Rishon branched out all over. Today it's Sadigera is the biggest, Bianer is Rishon. All right, today already we don't buy Malchut. It's not exactly the concept of Malchut. It's more mainstream Hasidus. But this Shtibel, it had Rishon, a Chotkev Hasidim, Rabbi Yisrael Friedman. He had the same name of his great-great-grandfather. The Rebbe in Gilo today, the only Rebbe in the world who is a brigadier general in the Israeli army, the Pachkana Rebbe. He's Rishon. He's Rishon. It's the Friedman name. He's Rishon. It's exactly Rishon. Vishnitz Stampta. Again, I'm getting into Yiddish, but Rishon Stampt. Vishnitz Stampt from Rishon. So they were exposed to these. Then there was Bavav. Bavav was very big. Bavav, unique. Bavav, interesting. Each Hasidus went its own way. Bavav stressed already Talmud Torah. It was much more mainstream. And the Bavav Rebbeim Simcha had the ability to tell a good story. See, part of Hasidut is a hitvadut, a fabrengen. When Hasidim come together, when Litvakim come together, the first thing they do is argue about a pshat and a Rambam. I said pshat yesterday. Noach, I said pshat yesterday in an unbelievable Rambam, and I hold myself to be correct. So I'll come together with a few of Litvakin. Immediately, a machlokes will be, is this the Rambam? Is this the reading? Is this, remember I spoke yesterday about the Kesef Mishnah, etc. All right. Hasidim come together. First of all, matrim talachayim. You drink a lachayim, you warm up a little, you sing a niggin, and then you tell stories. Mitzel Sipurim from the Rebbeim. You tell stories. The big thing in Hasidus. No, Reb Nachman of Breslov, do I have to tell you the stories and how many interpretations go into them? And that's a fabrengen. That's a, so this too, the Kalbach kids in this shtivel, next to their father's shul, they were absorbing a good deal of Hasidus in its multicoloring. It wasn't just one kind. Chabad, okay. Then you see the Chutkava, the Bavava, and these kids, Eliyachim, Shlomo's twin, being interviewed. In this Beis Medrash, we learned the real meaning of Yiddishkeit and Hasidus. Real davening and learning. Each year they imported new nigunim from Poland. And each first Pesach night, Hallel was a new experience with new songs. My brother and I practiced endlessly these nigunim to get them right. And it's amazing how he came up with all this material. These kids are growing up. Tremendous influence. So far you see the Yecker home, the grandfather in Basel, Switzerland, the great Zionist, love of Eretz Yisrael, love of Herzl, love of Rav Kook, and the Hasidic influence right next door to their father's formal Yecky-like shoe. Now, with the Hallel Pesach night, this is a perfect example of what we're talking about. If I heal Hallel Pesach night, I'm going to get into a machloka. How the heck are you saying Hallel at night with a bracha? Who ever heard of such a thing? What's with you? And he's going to tell me, all right, we say it, because at the Seder, we split it up. We don't want to split it up. Here we say it entirely. But the whole Seder, there's a reason why we split it up. We'll get involved in a machloket. Chassidish kid hears a Chassidish davening Hallel, Leil HaSeder. He's the happiest kid in the world. A story circulates, again, this is anecdotal, I can't swear to it, that Reb Velvel was walking home, he had finished davening, and he's walking home in Brisk, and he hears them singing Hallel beautifully, and he stops to hear the Nigun, and he comes home and he tells Reb Chaim, oh, Azay Shane, they so beautifully did they daven, did they sing? And Reb Chaim told them off. What right do they have to say Hallel? What right do they have to make a bracha? Who heard of such a thing, saying Hallel at night? So you see, right here, he talks about the Hallel. We practice endlessly these nigunim. Now, there's a very fascinating footnote here, because in Yerushalayim there's a synagogue called Yakar. Any of you know about it, what I'm talking about, Yakar? It's in Katamon. It's had a long history. It comes from England. In England there was a Rabbi Rosen. Rabbi Rosen, I believe, was Scottish in his birth and origins. He later learns in Mir. And he comes back to England in the 1930s, and he organizes the Carmel School. I don't know if it still exists today. If anyone is England listening and is of English origins, you can tell me. It was a very fine boarding school on the level of Ramaz. They say that Rabbi Rosen was more English than the king, than the queen. And he had learned in Mir as a big Talmud Chacham. And he raised a wonderful family. I taught part of the family. I had a daughter in Michlala. And I believe all his children live in Israel. I believe all his children. One son, Mickey, Zichron Olvach, he married a Talmid of mine, again, an American girl whose family came in Aliyah from the Upper West Side, a Radisdorfer, and the Gila, and he brought over the shul Yakar from London to Yerushalayim. There's a branch of it in North Tel Aviv that's involved in outreach. And Yakar in Yerushalayim is, it's not the usual synagogue. It's very innovative, and a lot of singing, and occasionally they'll tell you Yom Atzmut, everyone should bring their musical instrument for davening Yom Yerushalayim with music, all right? The Chatam Sofer would not be that happy, but in this generation, Baruch Hashem, we need it. So One night, Mickey Rose, and I knew him well, he died young, Zichrono Livracha. His wife remarried. She remarried, I think he was widowed too. One night he interviews Shlomo Lekalbach. And in 1993, it's right near the end of Shlomo's life, he says to Shlomo, how can it be you grew up in a German Yekka home and yet became a Hasidic singer? And Shlomo told him about the shtibble. And Shlomo even claimed that his father would have preferred the Chotke v'shtibble himself had he not been obligated to his own synagogue. So you see, it's not just the kids, but the father already was seeking more than the German approach, the Yekki approach, which was colder than the Hasidic approach. But this isn't all. There was more influence. Parents are living in Baden, Austria. What kind of yeshiva do you have there? What kind of education? So the parents brought a private tutor into the house. The tutor, all the tutors they ever had were Litvaks. And these Litvaks, one came from Panovich, one came from Telz, they were learning around the clock. And Kalbach stated, according to good German education, children at a certain time must go to bed so they can be alert the next day. But I had to deal with my teacher, who was a young man living on the third floor of our house, that if I was supposed to be asleep, I would sneak out of my room and study with him day and night. And here too, you see the influence. He's exposed to learning. And I need not tell you, when you're exposed to learning at a young age, you start learning Gemara, and you look at Shas and all the volumes, well, if it clicks with you, you're never going to stop learning the rest of your life. You know, I tell the story, I think I wrote it up in Washington, that fifth grade in Salanta, we're introduced to Gemara. And the Rebbe who taught me, Eile Metziyut Shaloch, again, it's before the Shanghai crowd, before the end of World War II. He wasn't even a Shemesh Shabbos, but he was a maskil, and he had learned Gemara in his youth. And all right, the wee kids are introduced. Yei Shalomidat, Abaye, Rava, Tashma, Tashma. No, the average American kid, and by the way, until today, this is a problem. I know in Israel they've held conferences upon conferences, how to get the youngsters excited about Gemara. What Gemara do you teach? How do you teach? Etc. So he saw we kids, fifth grade kids, American kids, what the heck are we interested in? And I'll never forget, this Rebbe did something. He's changed my life. And he was in Shishem Shabbos. He said, Talmidim, atem tzarichim lahavin. It's a boxing fight. Joe Walcott versus Joe Lewis. Check out in the 40s, these two fighters. And each one is around. Tarshma! Round one, round two, round three. Who's right? Who wins? Well, I have to admit, from that day on, I don't believe a day in my life has passed, including today already. I've already learned, you saw me davening, you didn't know that. I woke up at 4, and I already learned 4 siddurim before you saw me at the minyan. You follow? And I'm not finished yet. All right, what to do? And that's only learning to keep myself in shape. Nothing to do with preparing shayurima. That's a different story. But you get excited. That Rebbe with Joe Walcott and Joe Lewis changed my life. Now, you should know that this comes back. It's not something forgotten. Do you know that many, many decades later, I'm contacted by the big shots in Jewish agency. What do they want out of me? I'm just a Malamed. And they tell me that Mr. Perach, my teacher, lived to be 99. And he always would boast about his student who became a rabbi, Rothkopf, yours truly. And he raised kids. Some of them are multi-billionaires. They wanted him to contribute. They wanted to get to the children so they would contribute to something in the Jewish agency, establish some fund. And they recorded me speaking about their father and his influence on me. So it shows you, so many decades later, Joe Walcott and Joe Lewis came back Laman Torah Hashem Tamima. But this now is a new influence. These kids, what Litvish means, learning and growing, and what you're exposed to. And remember, you never know it all. A vot from the Rav Simcha, one vot from the Rav, and it makes your coming here from where you come, Beit Vagan. Where do you live? Harnof, excuse me. I knew right. You live where my daughter lives. Harnof. Makes it worthwhile. One vot from the Rav. The Rav said, I'm speaking in Yiddish, but I don't know if you know. Vash meintas a Talmud Chacham. Why do we use the word Talmud Chacham? Either you're a Talmud or a Chacham. No. You constantly have to try to become a Chacham. But if you think you achieved, you're fooling yourself. I'm a Talmud Chacham. Follow? Climbing the... Never achieve it all to the day you die. And we saw this with the Rav always. Something new, going deeper, climbing. Ah, what a vod. The Karl Bachs were bitten by this bug. Now, who else came to the hot springs? Reb Yosef Shlomo Kahneman. No, Noach, the Panovich of Rosh Yeshiva. Did you ever meet him? I met him. He was a charismatic, like the Bialish, like your relative, the Satma. You understand what I'm saying? People say about the Bialish, before his stroke, he was so charismatic. People say about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, someone just told me yesterday, how he got $2 from the Rebbe, a Talmud of mine, the Rebbe looked at him with his eyes, charismatic. Wow. Shlomo Yosef Kahneman, Gadol Shebe Gedolim. Overwhelming. And he would come to the hot springs and the kids were influenced. They saw a gadol, a Litvisher gadol, and the story is told about his mother, that Rebbetzin Pestia, his mother, heard the struggle. This is the late 30s of the yeshiva to remain open. Poland was going through a terrible economic period. She took her jewelry, sold it, gave the money to the Panovich Rosh Yeshiva. So I need not tell you, it has an influence. Shulamit Levavitz, Reb Shlomo's oldest sister, was quoted as saying, this experience, meeting the Panovich Rav and what their mother did, made an indelible impact on Shlomo in appreciating the value of the Talmudic studies, and it motivated him to become a scholar, a Talmud Chacham. The clouds are gathering. It's 1938, and right before Kristallnacht, they got out. Father, family, tells, went to Lithuania. Somehow at that moment in time, they felt that Lithuania would be safer. And I need not tell you, this takes us back, you talk about 38, 39, the famous story with Reb Gedalia Shor. And Reb Gedalia Shor, raised in Detroit, an American-grown Reb Aaron Cutley used to say about him, the first Gadol who grew up in America, marries and comes to study in Kletsk with Reb Aaron, and the American embassy or consul near where Kletsk was orders him back to America. War clouds are gathering. This is right before September 1st, 39. And he sells his furniture, gives up the apartment, he's going back with his wife, and Reb Aaron sends him a letter which reaches him already when he's on the way to the boat. Chaval, don't leave. I'll buy you new furniture, come back. Nothing will happen. Lithuania is safe. And I need not tell you that a lot has been written on this topic, a lot will be written on the topic, but we're only human beings, so we can only judge with our eyes before us. I need not tell you, my grandchildren, Noach, and great-grandchildren, all of them ask me, how can it be that you still remain in America? Teaneck, Kew Gardens Hills. New Square. The handwriting is on the wall. And I explained to them my Divrei Torah, you've all heard it, Lech Lecha Mayatzecha, Maladcha, Beit Avicha. And it's very hard to jump up. But when you tell me your daughter is getting married here and she lives here, I'm happy, go back, gesundheit, eat hot dogs and cherry pie and celebrate July 4th. We want the children here. Kanaim hara. My brother and I came. My brother just sent me a picture of his whole family. Binyamin, I have the picture in the office. Yomo saw it. We cannot count how many faces are in that picture. What was it, 100, 200? This is my brother, my younger brother. Who are we talking about? Medical doctor. Retired, teaches in medical schools today. You can't be a... Can't operate when you hit 70 here, you're finished. I'm lucky I teach Torah. No one can kick me out as long as I have what to teach. But Baruch Hashem, what we have contributed, I don't have to, I'm not equal to my brother. He has one daughter who changed the face of history. 13 children, and these are all, either you're in the army, a high officer, you're learning Torah around the clock. There's no fakery in that family. Got it? Baruch Hashem, I also can fill a pretty picture, but not equal to my wonderful brother. And we have another brother, and his family is in Borough Park. I wonder what's doing there. But anyway, forget about that. They reach Tells, they think they're safe, and the kids, where do you think they're going to school? Yekes, who davened in a chassidish shtibel, they're going to Tells Elementary school. These are kids right after Bar Mitzvah, starting gymnasium. They're exposed to Tells, Mamlacha Shel Torah, Tells in Europe. And somehow the father has seichel. I would imagine it's more the mother than the father, because the Gemara says, Bina Yetera Benashim, and life has taught me women are smarter than men. When it comes to life questions, kol asher tomalech hasara, shma b'kola. Cheryl, that was in the Mossad, the person in charge of our branch. One time my wife and I are sitting there and we disagree on something with life and death questions with Russia. It's not small matters. And Aryeh Kroll, Zeichet Tadakras, has been, harazra kefet, tishma l'kol ishtacha. They evidently saw they got to get out. And with miracles, they were on one of the last boats. They got to England from England. It may have been the last boat that went directly to America. And reportedly, the captain informed them, quote, now you don't know what a miracle it is that you are on my ship, but one day you will know. And here they come, immigrants, greenhorns, not speaking the language properly, to the United States. His father gets a position. Again, the Kabach family was well known. You won't believe where he becomes rabbi. Young Israel of Crown Heights. Young Israel of Crown Heights, it's hard for you to comprehend what young Israel of Crown Heights was. The outstanding, wealthiest neighborhood where you found Jews. In Crown Heights, you had the biggest conservative temple in the world. what was it called? Today it's all Chabad, including the temple. I think it was called the Brooklyn Jewish Center, Rabbi Louis Leventhal. I've told you many times that's how Chabad went up and crowned up in Crown Heights. You know what I'm talking about, Binyamin? The Rebbe, when he came, he was in a hotel, the Greystone, on the Upper West Side, and he asked the key Hasidim who were still from in America, and these people had some money and insight, where should I open my shtibbel? What is the fanciest neighborhood in New York City? And they said, we'll check it out. They came back and told the Rebbe, the biggest conservative temple is in Crown Heights. And the Rebbe said, that's where we're opening. And they bought 770, and as they say, the rest is history. So, Young Israel, the Crown Heights, you have no idea how prominent this synagogue was. And here, he took over the shul, and people loved him. But it was only a few years he had heart problems. Again, people go through life, people run away from Hitler. People have to make tremendous adjustments. It's not always so good for your health. Tell me, who took over Rabbi Kalbach's position? Shlomo, you should know who lives in West Hempstead. Well, who lives there? Your cousins? What's the family? Yeah, who took over the position? Rabbi Harold Tzvi Konotopsky. All right? I mentioned the name. Please stand. This was the top Talmud of the Rav from the 1940s. I had the schut to know him intimately. A Gon Adir, a Talmud Chacham. He was a Rebbe in BTA. And rabbi of the Young Israel. This was a top position. And this is where Rabbi Kalbach was when he first came to America. The Rabbi Konotopsky story, there's a certain sadness to it because the neighborhood starts to change. And some of the Jews who lived in Crown Heights wound up in the suburbs, West Hempstead. And they brought Rabbi Konotopsky to West Hempstead. And he couldn't catch on there. He was used to a rabbinate in the city, an urban rabbinate, not a suburban rabbinate. From West Hempstead he came in Aliyah, and a guy named Aaron Rakefet and Harold Konotopsky, we taught door-to-door next to each other in Michlala, the original Michlala in Bayit Vagan, in a converted house that was built, you know, with apartments. Oh, wow. But this was where Rabbi Kalbach was rabbi. From there, he bought a shtibbel. There was a rabbi on the Upper West Side who owned the shtibbel. The Kalbachs bought it. And this was a smaller rabbinate. It wasn't distressful. And they lived. They lived above the shul. And now the question is, where do you send the little Shlomo to school? Eliyachayim, the twins, to school. So again, the choice was really between two institutions. Talmudical Academy, what we popularly will call YU, Uptown, or Teira V'Das in Brooklyn. Masifta Teira V'Das was already on the map. And the Yekkes, whatever the reasons are, you might think in theology they should be closer to YU. What can I tell you? You all, I trust, know my two volumes on the Rav by heart in order to breathe air. Simcha, very important work where the Rav talks about, the guy named Rakefet translated it from Yiddish to English. Where I differ than Rav Hirsch, and it's a magnificent, magnificent essay with a lot of depth to it. And I've spoken about it. I can lecture on that essay for one full year. But that's not important. What's important is, with all the differences, why you and Rav Hirsch were not that far apart. But there was one tremendous difference, and the Yekkes never forgave YU. Namely, YU is a liberal arts college. There is no censorship. You can say whatever you want and teach whatever you want. It's no censorship. Whatever the reasons are, Rabbi Revel, my cousin, Rabbi Belkin, Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, they all felt that you got to be prepared for the big world. And if you heard Rakefet yesterday, you could understand that at least he is a good product of YU. He knows how to deal with the paganistic world around us. Teira Vidas was no liberal arts. You had to be frum. You taught frum kait. It was like Machon Lev. Machon Lev does not have liberal arts. It's limited. Science, mathematics, accountancy, nursing. There's no apikursus. You go to YU, you learn Darwin's theory, you read all types of literature, you have teachers who curse in the classroom, they think they're wise guys. No, is it still that way today? Nothing has changed. Ibn Shalom, how many years? I graduated 59. What year did you graduate?
2000, last year, 2 years.
2017, nothing has changed from 1959 to 2019, nothing has changed. So the kids went to Teira Vidas. Ah, now Rav Shlomo goes to Torah Vidas, and there you all know from my lectures they brought in a tremendous Litvisha Talmud Chacham Reb Baruch Be'er Leibovich's Talmud Mufak Rav Shlomo Hyman. And Rav Shlomo Hyman, this was a counterweight to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was now at YU. And Teira Vidas, in order to hold on to bright students, had to have a counterweight. And Rav Shlomo Hyman was it. And by the way, Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Hyman were very close on a personal level. It is said that Rav Shlomo Hyman visited Rav Moshe once a month to speak and learning. Went uptown from Brooklyn to speak with Rav Chaim Brisker's brilliant son, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. And here these kids are studying there, and Reb Shlomo Hyman loves the little Shlomo LeKalbach, and Shlomo LeKalbach loves Reb Shlomo Hyman. And while this is going on, the war, Reb Aaron Cutler, America, 41, Fat Hatzalah, 1943, as you all know from my Shayurim, Rav Aaron Cutler organizes Lakewood. Big drive on to get top students to Lakewood. Rav Aaron, the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva, we have to help him. We have to help him build the yeshiva that will be second to none. And you got to remember, many of the Balabatim were quizzical. What's going to go on? Going to build the lake where kids are not going to go to college? Which American kid will want to go there? And Mr. Mendelovich, founder, dean of Teira Vidas, Reb Shlomo Hyman, Rosh Yeshiva, they bring Reb Aaron, they give this shiur in Teira Vidas. This is 43. When all the Hatzalah work has come to an end, basically, because there's nothing you can do. There's no way to save Jews. Thousands are being executed every day, and there's no way you can do anything anymore. There was something going on through Switzerland, but the Baron now is free to go back to teaching Torah, unfortunately, if you understand what I mean. And he recognized there's nothing more he can do, and Shlomo and Eliachayim here a baron at Teira Vidas, and both of them go on to Lakewood. They're among the first students in the Lakewood crowd. Lakewood began with 12, 13, 14 students. They're very into discussions, but it began. And they're among the first. And for 6 years, Shlomo learns in Lakewood. Belev the Nefesh. Now, his mother, who now is the main personality in the family, the father is compromised by ill health, he can't do what he wants to do, but the mother is the personality, and she is overjoyed. She feels Shlomo will become the next Gadol Hadar. You want to know how brilliant he was? Let me quote what Offenbacher of Fear brings in the name of next door, Professor Zevlev. And a drop of background. Reb Aaron Cutler, and I've said this before, it's no chiddush, Reb Aaron Cutler gave shir, Simcha, you're in Lakewood, it's 1944. You're in Reb Aaron shir. You're a Teira Vadas graduate, you've studied with Rav Shlomo Hyman. You're listening to Reb Aaron. You're going to understand, if you're lucky, the first 15 minutes. At that point, you're lost. I was in Lakewood. I'm listening to Reb Aaron. I was a bright kid. It's not like today. You're an older person. Your mind is not what it was when you were a kid. Bimei churpi, Chazal say. Sharp. First 15 minutes. You're not the only one who doesn't understand. Reb Aaron, the Rav said when Reb Aaron died, you know what the difference is between me and Reb Aaron? When I give you shir, I want everyone to understand. Reb Aaron gave for the Mitzuyonim. In my time in Lakewood, two or three understood everything to the end. And they would say it over, you would chazer it, go over and work. One shir would take you 3-4 days to understand properly. In Schleimele Karbach's time, Professor Zev Lev was learning there. Professor Lev said, Schleimele and myself were the only two people who understood the entire shir. We would then help the others comprehend what Reb Aaron said. Now, Professor Zev Lev, I don't have to tell you who he was. He won Pras Yisrael for his work in physics. Okay? Genius of geniuses. I knew him. I mean, I knew him quite well. Our children were in school together. What an individual. Machon Lev. It's his baby. He established it. And he said about Schleimele Karlbach that he was on my level of learning and understanding Reb Aaron Cutler. You can understand what I'm talking about. So here is Schleimele, Yeke, Chassid, Litvak, all mixed into one. 1948, his father suffers a heart attack. Schleimele stops learning full-time. He and Elie Chaim have to come back to New York, have to help the father, help the mother. Children have a responsibility. I can tell you, my brother lives near his daughter, I live near my eldest daughter, and the children, as busy as they are, and I feel bad for them. I call it the sandwich, it's called the sandwich generation. You have older parents, you have grandchildren, children, grandchildren, and the children have to look up and look down. But that's part of life. You have to accept it graciously. And that's the Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Chav Tet, Kibbut Aviyim. Gemara asks, what is Kibbut Aviyim? The Gemara's answer is unbelievable. You feed your parents, help them drink, clothe them, wheel them in, wheel them out. So Rav Kefet says, take a look. Change the Gemara. What do parents do for children? No, you just had another baby. No, what do you do? Bottle, later feeding, dressing, changing the diaper, wheel them in, wheel them out. Keep it up, yape, is paying back a debt. It shouldn't be commanded, it should be natural, but God knew the evil instinct in man, the paganistic society, spit in your parents' face, who are your parents, what is Masorah? Don't give a hoot. The world is yours. That's not Torah. They had it commanded, because they knew that one day we'd have to deal with the New York Times. All right. Father suffered a heart attack, and the Karlbachs are back in Manhattan. Father would be teaching classes in the shtibble, and he didn't have the energy to go further. He asked his son, take over for me. And he was terrific. Everyone loved him. Schleimele. Everything was in Yiddish, by the way. Nothing is in English yet. And he called his learning group TASGIG, Tasgig. an acronym for taste and see that God is good. Tamu Ra'u. It's based upon a pasuk in Tehillim, Lamedalet Pasuk Tet. Chaim Waxman. Who's Chaim Waxman? The famous Jewish sociologist, my good friend, married to Reb David Lifshitz's daughter, Chaya, right or wrong, the Tzuvalka Reb's daughter, ain't Kleinekite, not a small matter. Chaim Waxman was one of the students of Schlemel the Kalbach, and he describes in his interview, he said there were 10 to 15, never more, but these people listened to Schlemel tell stories, Schlemel would sing, they were inspired, and they were overwhelmed by the man's charisma. Now, while this is going on, Schlemmer is seeking out what's happening in New York. He wants to learn Hebrew. And this I mentioned last week, he and his father go to an ulpan at JTS. And again, you have to understand, JTS was not what it became today. JTS was still half and half, or more than half, part of the Torah world. Professor Liebman was there, Professor Finkelstein, Professor Heschel, Professor Friedland, you can go on and on, people, Professor Cohn, whose gittin were accepted by the Agudas HaRabbanim, by the chief rabbinate. It was a different world. And there was a professor who was teaching Hebrew, and that's where Schlemmel went to learn Hebrew. In JTS, there was a piano. And Schlemmel saw the piano, and he started playing, started singing Hasidic tunes. One of the students at JTS, Sarah Schleffler Kelman, evidently her maiden name was Sarah Kelman, and she heard him play, and she invited him to give a concert to a Hillel Center on Convent Avenue. It could be it's a Hillel Center that had something to do with Columbia University. And Schlemmel was very hesitant to accept the invitation because he didn't speak English properly. And she told him, look, you don't have to speak English. You'll play, you'll speak, you're broken English, but the main thing will be the music. And she advertised the concert, the place of music in the Hasidic tradition. Many years later, this was his first formal concert in America. Many years later, she attended a concert with her husband and children on a Motzai Shabbos in 1959. And as soon as I entered the auditorium, Reb Shlomo spotted me, recognized me immediately, jumped off the stage, ran to meet me and embrace me. I couldn't believe that so many years later he still remembered me. He said, Sarah Edel, that was evidently her Yiddish name, the Baal Shem Tov's daughter, name Edel, do you know that you were the first person who invited me to perform before an audience? You were my very first sponsor. You gave me a title for my life's work. The place of music in the Hasidic tradition. Fabulous little stories. But notice, he ran and embraced her. That's Schlemmel. That's the life description. Yes?
Was he playing music in Lakewood for 6 years? Like, where did
it
come from?
No. He played in the Spitmore. In Lakewood he was learning. When I learned in Lakewood, they spoke of him as a tremendous matmid and a lamdin, and they were sitting shiva that he had gone off the path to Chabad and was busy in outreach, but they said, I never heard that he ever did a public performance in Lakewood.
So he only started music when he...
Well, not that he only started, he already was involved in music as a kid with the waltzes behind his garden, but formally, only when he comes back to New York. Then he decided he has to learn English, and he took courses at Columbia University in a special program for immigrants to the United States. Now, He never became totally fluent in English in the sense you could tell it wasn't his native language. He developed an idiosyncratic grammar that became his hallmark. His mixture of Yiddish words such as mamish, gewalt, heilige, nebuch, I don't have to tell you, these were mamish. How do you explain a mamish? It's real, it's true. Gewalt, fabulous. I just heard a shiur in Gris Kolil, Rabbi Bednash. Gewaldic, how would you say it? Ah, the heilige Rabbi David Miller, you follow? This is Shlomo Nebuch. He could have been a good Jew, but he got involved with paganic existence. All right, Nebuch. Providers, listeners, some of whom were quite assimilated with a nostalgic reminder of a Hasidic Eastern European life and culture that had been lost in the Holocaust. These expressions eventually became part and parcel of the modern Kalbach's followers' mode of speech and a linguistic part of what one might call a neo-Hasidic identity. And I need not tell you, we have the expression Yinglish. When we grew up in the yeshiva world, we spoke English, absolutely. Yiddish words were part and parcel. Not the Rav. When the Rav spoke English, he spoke English. You had to hold the dictionary in front of you to comprehend them. I need not tell you the words that the Rav taught me. Willy-nilly. Whoever uses the word willy-nilly, that was the Rav. Either or. Und feder or. He stormed away at us in English. When Danny Greer got him to transfer to English in 1960. But Kalbach, you hear him speak, you can understand very well. It's Yinglish, or what he calls here, a neo-Hasidic identity. But this was Kalbach. Let me make one more point. His ability to tell stories, and so many books have been written. I mean, if you remember two weeks ago or so, when he introduced these topics, I quoted a Talmud of mine who said he was told many years ago, the world will look back at Kalbach as a modern Baal Shem Tov. And that influence in storytelling came from the Bava Rebbe. The Bava Rebbe who came to America, also Shlomo, everyone's named Shlomo today, Rav Shlomo Halberstam, who was a survivor. And you should know it, the story with the Bava Rebbe is very fascinating, because when he came to America, he was ready to give up being a Rebbe. He thought he would work here in insurance, I believe. There were people who said, Rebbe, we'll help you financially, you know, get you involved. And then they pleaded with him, we need you. You know, again, the blood is in his veins to be a Rebbe. He was a Rebbe. He came from Rebbeim. And Shlomo described when the Rebbe would speak at his table, at his tish, these tales of the Bava as a powerful way of healing broken hearts and generating love and understanding. And that's a beautiful description, healing broken hearts. These were people. Who were these people? 90% were survivors who had gone through the hell of the Holocaust. And when the Rebbe told the story, a way of healing broken hearts and generating love and understanding. And let me just end off here on page 53, footnote 82. Natan pays homage to his father. My father, Professor Elmer Affenbacher, recalls first meeting Shlomo Kalbach on the steps of the Bava Shtibel in Manhattan sometime around 1947. So, as you can see, all these influences give us Shlomo Kalbach. I don't know of anyone else at such an early age tasted from three different beautiful. Tasted. tasted from three different beautiful trees. One tree, his family roots, the Kalbach family, Yekes, German Orthodox Jews in the full sense of the word, students of the schooling of Rabbis Hirsch and Hildesheim and all that goes with it. Kalbachs were all graduates of the Hildesheimer Rabbinic Seminary. So it's fascinating who he came from. And then the Hasidic shtibbel around the corner where they would rather daven than daven with their father. And then the Litvashel Rebbeim teachers, private teachers, meeting Rav Kahaneman, running away to Litta, tells from there to the United States, Teira V'Das and Lakewood. Now, I'm going to leave off exactly here, and the Ribbono Shel Olam should be kind to us. And as I grow older, these words are more and more important. I should be able to pick up in health and dignity, Chodesh Elul. I'll pick up exactly where I left off. I want to go further and talk about Rav Shlomo's greatest achievement and greatest contribution. And for that lecture, Yomo will have to give Kiddush, because he is only sitting here to a certain degree because of Shlomo Lakavach, born in Kiev, Ukraine. So understand what we're talking about. So today we did Rav Shlomo's life. We've gotten to know him already, and we've dealt with the good, we've dealt with the questionable part as well. Tie it together with yesterday's shiur and the next shiur I'll be giving on lifting up a woman who fell, etc. A Jewish woman who fell. I'm very happy that I didn't listen to the Rav, and when I was ill, you'll ask the students, they'll fill you in. I'm very happy I was a chutzpan, and I didn't listen to the Rav, and I'm continuing in the two worlds I love so much, Shas Paiskim, and the history of the most wonderful people in the world, the saga of the Torah Jew. And we'll pick up and we'll go further, Meir Kahana, and we won't escape the difficulties, believe me. And from Meir we go to Rebbetzin Esther Jungreis, and then I might need a year and a half, a year, 2 years. We're going to deal with Noach's family, the Satmarov. And then I'll say I'm finished with the little bit I know about the history of Torah in the United States. And we go to East Europe, to the Yeshivat, the world which I came from, to say the least. Although I have to be honest, I'll deal, Noach, with Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin as well, which is very unique as far as Yeshivat go. And that's, by the time I'm finished with that, I'll be hitting 100. So the Ribbono Shel Olam should be kind to me and keep me in health. Now, let me just go one step further. I have some freebies. Binyam, please hand that to me. First of all, I want to mention that in the city where Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was born, in Zagreich, or Zagadi, I think it's pronounced in Litta today, they put up a whole monument to him. I imagine the local Gentiles understand this will become a big tourist attraction. And they wrote on the monument in Hebrew and in Russian, "Miyasedu mecholel tnuat hamusa sheshina et seder hayom b'olam hayehudi v'limer hamusa v'tikun hamidat hafach b'schuto lechelik hashuv mikur hachituch hachinuchi shel hadarot habayim." And they put this up. Boy, I hope a Gentile in Litha understands that, but it's beautiful. I want to mention it's very sad. Leave it to the paganistic New York Times to pick it up. On June 10th, 2021, an essay was published on the op-ed page, guest essay, by Molly Mizells. Do you realize what the name Mizells is? If she's from that family, that's one of the most chashuv. You're related, Noach. You're related. Believe me, you're related to the Mizells one way or another. Molly Mizells, a graduate of Yeshiva University. She's studying at U of California now. I shouldn't have to choose between my Judaism and my queerness. And she's one of those who filed the lawsuit which can destroy Yeshiva University. Since 1886. Eitz Chaim, Yeshiva University, and she can destroy it single-handedly. Something that came out on the internet today, Yavner Academy alumni, class, third grade, 1980-81, in this picture is the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, Naftali Bennett. And Raquel had already said, give him credit, the first time we have a Prime Minister who puts on tefillin daily. Who else?
Ephraim Goldberg,
my comrade Ephraim Goldberg. Wow. Classman. Wow, so when he comes to Israel, he'll have special VIP.
He was on his podcast.
If anyone is interested, this is the latest Divrei Torah from Rav Asher Weiss. Deals with Shlichut and Mitzvah. Very interesting, Rav Asher Weiss, Malei Bagadish. This was just given out as a wedding. A tremendous Talmud Chacham, a Chabadnik, Shmuel, Nachum Shmayer is Ajag's father, if I'm not mistaken. Divrei Torah, Shas Paiskim, Chabad Psakim on Inyana Diyoma. You'll find that the main country is there something I gave Sherman years ago. Are you allowed to go on a boat 3 days before Shabbos if you know you'll be seasick? The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yutet, you know you'll be seasick and you will not have a covered Shabbos. So if anyone's interested in this country, I went through it, very, very interesting. If anyone wants a magnificent picture, I made copies, the Rav and Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. It's the best picture I've ever seen of the two brothers, Gedolei Yisrael, together. And finally, something we referred to, how Rabbi Lichtenstein, when he married Tova, how the wedding will have to be postponed because the Rav was in the hospital going through an operation due to illness. And here's what they sent out afterwards, due to illness on our family, the marriage of our daughter Tova Tana Lichtenstein has been postponed from Tuesday, December 23rd, 1959, to Tuesday, January 26, 1960. And it's signed Joseph and Tanya Soloveitchik without any titles whatsoever. Finally, one more freebie. A Talmud of mine who became a big Chabadnik and a big Talmud Chacham, he deals with women wearing pants. Dine levishat mitnasim leisha. If anyone wants it, you are welcome to it. Finally, before I open it to questions around the world, I want to bow before the Almighty that he kept me in strength, that I recovered from a difficult illness, the corona. And I've had a lot of nachat, many more great-grandchildren this year, and being Masada Kedushin at a grandchild's marriage. And we've now completed 62 years of teaching Torah. And I look forward to the 63rd year, Be'ezrat Hashem. Be'etziyato, Mahu Omer, Modani Lefanecha, Adonai Elohai, Velohei Avotai, ששמתי חלקי מיושבי בית המדרש ולא שמתי חלקי מיושבי קרנות שאני משכים והם משכימים אני משכים לדברי תורה והם משכימים לדברים בתהילים אני אמל והם עמלים, אני אמל ומקבל שכר, והם עמלים ואינם מקבלים שכר. אני רץ והם רצים, אני רץ לחיי העולם הבא, והם רצים לבשחת, שנמה ואתה, אלוהים תורידם לבשחת אנשי דמים וממה, לא יחצו ימיהם, ואני אבטח בך. Yomo, are there any questions here? Yomo, open it to the... Yeah, yes,
come on. I wanted to add, Rabbi Eisenstein shared a few weeks ago that his father was single for many years in the upper west side of Manhattan, and his father would often like sit by himself in restaurants and eat by himself until like his late 30s. And one day randomly, a Shlomo would walk into the restaurant, he gave him a big hug, and left, and his father says that he could still feel Rabbi Shlomo's hug. To this day.
Beautiful.
And he got him through and he think I got married and...
Beautiful, beautiful. That's where the Rebbetzin deserves a lot of credit too. She got involved in Shatchanut and many Shidduchim came out of Hineni. These were great, great people. As I said in my introductory lecture, we lived the Holocaust, we lived the establishment of the State of Israel. And these were people who devoted their life to recreating Jewish Torah identity, period. Yom open it to the world. Baruch HaTor, Nereh HaMelech HaLam, She'akon Yevet V'Rao. Brian, can they hear me yet? Brian, can you hear me? No, he doesn't.
Open. I hear you now, Rabbi.
Okay, I just want to tell you, I have outsiders today, so you could have come. That's what you remember.
Okay.
You asked me last week, and I wasn't sure. But
right.
Since Bednash, they're allowing outsiders for his shiur, so all I had to do, I told the guard this morning, there may be some outsiders coming in. Allow them in, bekavod. Okay, did the guard ask you who you are?
No.
I told. So good. He knew. I told them that they'll say to you they're coming to my shiur. And how did you know how to find the room?
Upstairs.
Upstairs. Good. No. Okay. Good. Because I told him he doesn't speak English that well. He's Russian origins. I don't know how good his Hebrew is either. But you speak Russian?
No.
All right. Good. But you got here. That's all that matters. Okay. Are there any questions? Yes.
Rabbi,
good summer
year.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. What year? Go ahead.
I'm saying, Rabbi, till when is this shiur continuing? Is this last week?
This is the last shiur. The building is absolutely empty. The only one who will enter here every day is yours truly, just to answer emails, just to Xerox what I need for my writing and new shiurim. And Ribbono Shel Olam, I conduct my life out of my little office here. And you got to remember, Yomo is my right hand. Without him, I would fall flat on my face in the new world.
So we start again after the Chagim?
No, not after the Chagim. We start again Chodesh Elul. Exactly when and how, Professor Tarragon will inform everyone. I'll let Morty know what's happening. And you'll get anyone who's on the email list for the link will get an email. I hope it will say, dear students of Harav Rakefet, we are happy to tell you Gris is open. You are welcome to come, and the Rebbe will be the happiest person in the world to shake hands and put his arm around live pulsating students. I hope that will be the situation, but considering the airport and, you know, what's going on around the world, we have no guarantees. Just remember, as of tonight, I'm not going to wear a mask at Maariv tonight. I'm going to wear it for Mincha, but I'm taking it off at night because we start the day with Shkia, with Seita Kachavim. So tomorrow's June 15th. I want to see one person in the shul tell me off that I'm not wearing a mask. I'll punch him in the nose. That's all I'll say. All right, Baruch Hashem.
Can I mention something?
Yeah.
I apologize in advance for sharing some sad news, but this is a Yeshiva University gathering. Last night we lost the founding dean of Wurzweiler, Professor Saul Green, who's an iftar overnight.
But he was my student. He was my student on Lachman.
Oh, Lachman. I'm sorry.
Baruch Dayan.
What is he? He's 90-something, 99, 98.
He was 30 days short of his 100th birthday.
Yeah.
Wow. Aye,
wow.
Sorry.
You said we have to go visit him again.
Where did he live? Where did he live in Israel?
He was on Rehov Tzvi Gretz.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sure why you'll send out an announcement. Wow. I tell you, the amount of death, this is so difficult to grow older. We lost Yitz Pessin, Rabbi Pessin. I mean, he's young. He's my brother, Shevet Bnei Akiva. We grew up together in Bnei Akiva, he and his brother Nachum. And they built Shari Tzedek, his brother, Ein Klein Kaidar.
I just quoted Saul because it was the anniversary of D-Day. And I remembered I was sitting at a simcha once in London, a family simcha, and he turned to me and he said, Nachum, the last time I was in London was June 5th, 1944. They were shipping us out to Normandy the next day.
Wow. Oh, God.
I remember that.
All right, I hope he left the Do Yishon Yivurach, and beautiful. And that's our nachat. We're only human beings, but we see our children, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren. I hope I'll be zocha like my mother to see my great-great-grandchildren. Shlomo?
I just want to mention one thing. I read about the Rishner that with old Malchus, he wore boots.
No. That goes without saying. But what I was stressing was the Jews loved the Malchut. It was perfect. It's the Gemara that when they came into the Beis Midrash, they saw all the gold, ein bo klam. Nothing was lacking. It's like what you strive for in life. By the way, a young lady heard this lecture of mine, a Talmid of mine, and she's in a wheelchair. And she's asked me why Kohanim who have mum would be in a wheelchair can't do the avoda. A fabulous question. So I used this concept that we all would like to be perfect. And I said, this is the concept that represents the ultimate dream which you and I both have. So she took the answer. She accepted it. She's an exceptional girl. I think they came in Aliyah from Kew Gardens Hills, Dafka. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, Rebbe, you know, there's a story. Samuel Hyman wrote a book about Hasidut, five dynasties that have problems finding a new Rebbe.
You're talking about the book that came out.
Heilman
wrote the book. I have the book. Samuel Heilman.
So he has a section where he has the Bayana Rebbe from Russia, and he describes how he davens Mincha and Yad Tamar, but he wants to get away from it all, so he comes back to Rehavia, because that's where he grew up, and he grew up davening in Yad Tamar. Sitting in the corner, nobody knows who he is.
They know who he is, but they respect him.
But no one understands
so when he sees this clean-shaven, normal-dressed guy. Unfortunately, I blew my cover. I didn't know me. He hugs me and kisses me, and they look, and the secret is, when he was a little boy, he ate in my house, and his father was my teacher. I was at his parents' when the father of Noach Breyer married, Reb Menachem Breyer, I should say, married the Biana Rebbe's daughter. I was at the engagement party on the Lower East Side, so that's how far we go back. And he's become a Rebbe. I taught his sister. His nephew is one of my, I taught his brother-in-law. His nephew is listening to this very Shia. So this is the Biana, Baruch Hashem. But people are amazed, but I say, you know, respect him exactly. His gabbai is outside. I never yet saw the gabbai davening. He's on the phone. He's sitting there outside Yad Tamar on the phone, which leads me to the Lubavitcher when Label Groner sat shiva. I think it was his father, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe in his mouth. So he sat shiva exactly a two-minute walk from my apartment. On Rehov Asa, his brother Yaakov, the eldest brother, lived. That's where he sat shiva. So here he is sitting shiva, and I know the whole family, and I'm very close, and his nephew is my closest friend, Svi Gromer Zichrono Livracha, and the phone is incessantly ringing. And they bring him a long phone with an extension cord. In those days, there was no cellular. And he's on the phone, and they're calling South Africa, they're calling Australia, they're calling America, they're calling Canada, they're calling Timbuktu, everyone with a question about the Rebbe, about this, about that. Finally, like a good Litvak, I say to him, Label, you're sitting shiva, you're not allowed to do work. How are you so busy on the phone? And Label looks at me and he says, Arnie, this is not work. Malacha you can't do. This is melechet hakodesh of the Rebbe. And that's permissible. So I couldn't argue with him, a Litvak and a chassid in dialogue, I would say. But that's a true story which matches what you said. Yes, is there anyone else that has a question? Okay, I want to wish you all a wonderful, productive summer. Don't aggravate over the new government. We have to give it a chance now. I go back to Yomo, my Talmud. We were Mishtadel. We did what we could. But now God ruled differently. Let's see what happens. Remember, the vote was 60 to 59. There's never been a government sworn in with such a bare majority. And the majority doesn't really hold because already one of the people of Lieberman said he's pulling out. He's not supporting. So I said to Yomo, I would imagine he's mad at Liebman, that Liebman posed as a right-winger, and he turned out to be a leftist. Yomo told me, no, it's nothing to do with that.
He didn't get a job.
His hatred of the Haredim. He cannot take Lieberman's hatred of the Haredim. And he doesn't wear a kippah. I was amazed. What did you say, Yomo?
And he, like someone said, he didn't get the job.
No, I don't want to be cynical. Today is a day we have to be positive. There are reasons why it's a very important day for
Wait, what happened to the 60? What happened to the 120th vote? I don't understand.
Abstained. He abstained. Someone abstained. I think it was an Arab.
One of the Arabs.
I know because of what's going on down south.
I thought you needed a majority of 61.
No. You just needed a plain majority to appoint the government. So, and I couldn't believe it that Lieberman, who's such a hater of Haredim, and this guy in his party elected, Yomo told me he goes to Gedolei Yisrael, he has feeling. I want to tell you, to hate Haredim, and I suffer with my grandchildren and so many fellow Jews who remember the question I asked you, who are you closer to? And there are people who argue with me, I'm closer to Zandberg, who wants to outlaw tefillin stands outside high schools than I am to a Jew from Toldot Aharon who never missed the day of putting on tefillin. And I have to tell you, you have to understand, we came out of the ghetto. Look at our families, look at our friends, look where we came from. We, on screen and in the classroom now, we represent what should have been 20 million Jews. How many are we? How many fell away the paganistic society around that, call it liberal, call it progressive, call it Western? How many fell away?
They're gone.
German origins, Hasidic origins, Litvish origins. Oh my. So don't be mad at the Haredi Jew. He's afraid to come out of the ghetto. And I say again and again, our responsibility, our achrayat, paved the way, show that one can be a gon in Torah, a tzaddik b'chol ma'asav, and we can live in the big world around us, l'kavod u'l'tiferet. The burden is on us. The onus is on us. And don't be angry at the Haredi Jew. He's frightened. I understand him. Love him. Bring him closer. I have a lot more in common with a Jew who puts on tefillin every day, like Naftali Bennett, than I do with a lady who wants to asa what Chabad does all over the world, and that they influence 1 million Sephardic children to run away from Yiddishkeit. That's permissible? And we have a tefillin stand? That's not. We have a lot
Did you hear about it happening in Haifa? The school was brought to a mosque where they went to pray? That's okay. But for women, for people to put on tefillin, that's not okay.
God have, all right, this is what we're up against then, but we got to be positive, and we got to keep on pushing ahead. And Brian, when you're in America next, get up and tell those Jews there, how can you remain in Chutz La'aretz after the Holocaust, after this last war, after the pathological hatred of the Jew and the pathological self-hatred of many Jews like Bernie Sanders? The worst thing in the world for them is that Israel exists and that we proudly remind them we are Jewish, we are the heirs of the Torah people. Got a lot ahead of us. Be'ezrat Hashem, we will succeed. Takes time. Mashiach doesn't come overnight. We will get there. All right, there's
a
lot more to talk.
That's why the Tikkach Hinuch is so important.
What did you say?
That's why the Tikkach Hinuch is so important.
Of course.
They made a big deal when Zvon Hamergad.
Of course they did. The Tikkach Hinuch is more important than any other tick in the state of Israel, including the Prime Minister, in my opinion. But okay. By the way, they say... The lady who got it, I think she's from Kachal Lavan, they say she's a Shomeret Shabbat. She's a graduate of Amit, is what I understand. So Baruch Hashem, Yiyeh Tov. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for your participation. Until we meet again in health and happiness, it should only be Besorah Tovat. And in honor of Yomo, and you owe a big thanks to Yomo. He's the host today. He sets it up. He worries about the internet. Until we meet again in health and happiness, in honor of Yomo, Das Vidanya.
Rabbi, stay well and have a good summer.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.